It's a True Faith podcast on a Thursday night with me, Simon Campbell, and on the line I've got Norman Riley. Dogger and Ben are covering the... What are they at again tonight, Norman? Some sort of podcast with the Times.
Times football podcast, isn't it? I think they go like from, I don't know, city to city, and they do them. So they've got Rafa there with George Colgan and Oliver Keir, so I'm sure it'll be worth a listen. I'll get plenty of Newcastle fans listening to it once it's available. But I'd imagine with it being the Times, you probably have to subscribe to it.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have Alex on as soon as he's finished at the end of the show. So stick around after me and Norman have had what to say about Man United, and we'll get the exclusive from Dodsy about what's happened at the Rafa night. So back to business, Norman. It is, in fact, a preview. There's another football match this week. I feel like I've had enough of them, if I'm honest. Last week was so brutal. Alas, Manchester United. It's a massive game. It always is. Man U at home. Every season, I look forward to it. I didn't look forward to Burnley on Wednesday last week, but I am looking forward to this. Is that mental? I don't know. We've got new players and stuff to get excited about, and it's just that kind of Rafa v Jose thing. I just think it's going to be a good day, a good atmosphere, and I really think we can get something. Am I mental, Norman? Do you think this lineup with this team with the few additions we've got in stand a chance against Man U, or win for another hammering?
No, the standard chance. You could see it to a certain extent. You know, Liverpool were, you know, they're more or less on par with Man U. I mean, as an attacking force, definitely. And we more than held our own against the Scousers. Obviously, you've got two contrasting styles of play. I think that Rafa's set up against Liverpool, Klopp's, you know, famous gegenpressing. It's an easier one for our squad of players to cope with on a tactical level, because it does allow you to almost sit back and like soak up that wave after wave of pressure. Whereas Mourinho, you have to see it, even though Man U score a lot of goals and they do batter teams, he is quite a defensive coach. His priority is basically like, you know, we just won't concede goals. That's his first priority, is like, let's not concede. And obviously, a lot of the time, that works. On Saturday against Spurs, you think about it, on Saturday against Spurs, he would have gone there with a game plan, right? Because as he does against all the sort of clubs in and around him, he goes there to stifle them. Like, especially when he goes to stifle the other team from playing and maybe hit them a break, or he'll always take nil nil draw. Like Mourinho would take nil nil draw with Chelsea, nil nil draw with Tottenham, nil nil draw with Man City. That's like kind of how he's won titles in the past, is by not losing to the teams around him and then just battering the teams like sort of fifth, sixth, seventh downwards. So against Spurs on Saturday, obviously that goal that had, like, you know, happened ridiculously quickly, it was almost like threw his game plan to shit. It was like, well, where do we go from here? And they conceded the other goal not long afterwards. And if you look at the match stats, they didn't really do anything. So a very possibly stupid part of my brain kind of wants us to, I mean, really would like us to get an early goal, because I think if we get a really early goal, we've got a really good chance against them. In terms of them being like, you know, better than us, of course, they're like a thousand things better than us in terms of playing personnel. But what we have got, the Rafa Jose thing is huge. You know, there's a definite rivalry there, and obviously Rafa's done him in incredibly important games in the past. There's the comment that Rafa's wife made against Mourinho in the past about them going up and clearing up Mourinho's messes.
No, I'll stop you there, Norman. You've literally, when you read the special on Sunday morning, that's one of me bits.
I'll tell you what, we'll not go into that then. It's a little sort of prelude to it, so you know, it'll whet people's appetite to read the special, mate.
Which you can subscribe to absolutely free. You'll find a link to it on truefaith.co.uk. It's totally free. Loads of mint writers put in just little snippets for ahead of each game. It's class. Please subscribe. Carry on, Norman. What were you saying?
We'll not go into that too much. But the needle will obviously add to it. I think obviously the majority of Newcastle fans are well aware of the history between them, so they're probably going to give Rafa a lot of support, but Mourinho a lot of grief. And to get like to go one up against them and to just continuously give Mourinho grief, I think would create a great atmosphere. And like you alluded to, there are many games at home to Man U where the atmosphere is flat. Initially, it usually starts off quite raucous, and obviously, you know, there are times they've battered us in the past, but we've had some brilliant performances against them at home. Even the McLaren relegation season, that performance was probably, in many ways, it was McLaren's team's best performance.
It was a fantastic game of football. Really enjoyed it, and summed up by Paul Dummett.
Featured obviously Paul Dummett's left foot volley, you know, which was just spectacular.
Yeah.
But it was a brilliant football. In fact, I thought the performance that night was so good by us that it was the first time that I thought, you know what, we might have a chance at survival. Yeah, obviously I was an idiot for thinking that, but it's, you know, when you put a good performance in against type teams like Man U, they're the kind of hopes and aspirations that that rear their head. More fool me, obviously. But I think, you know, we're a completely different side now, and they're a completely different side. I mean, even when Van Gaal was still pretty hard going on the eye, it was a very unusual game in that sense. But I don't think you're being unrealistic at all. If we get an early goal, or at least we don't concede early, then, and the atmosphere builds up, then the players will be up for it. I mean, as a professional footballer, especially a team coming up from the Championship, you have to be up for, you know, like Man U. I mean, what time's it? 2:15 kickoff?
Yep.
So hopefully, you know, there'll be a few drinks would have been had before the match. And I'm just hoping for a really raucous atmosphere and a kind of, you know what, let's press them a bit. It probably won't happen, the pressing aspect of it. But, you know, Rafa knows what kind of manager Mourinho is, so who knows? I don't think it'd be unrealistic at all. I mean, a draw is definitely not a question. And a win, even, you know, you look at, like, they were poor against Spurs. Obviously, Spurs are a completely different side to us, no doubt about that. But they were poor to the extent where they looked clueless after they went 1-0 down, and definitely after they went 2-0. And then you look at them against Huddersfield away. I mean, they lost to Huddersfield away, you know. This is a game that we can win, despite the fact that Man U are second. This is a game we can win. If Huddersfield can beat them at home, if Wagner can put out a team to beat Mourinho's side, then we certainly can. So there's no reason to approach the game with doom and gloom. And there were positives to take from the Palace game, despite the equaliser and the pressure we were under the second half. There were positives, and you're definitely not being daft, mate.
Right, no, you've got us absolutely convinced, Norman. Before, I was 50-50. Now we're definitely winning this game. I mean, yeah, you've summed up exactly how I think everyone sees Jose Mourinho these days. Like, he lines up against the top five, like a team who's in a relegation scrap like us, lines up for every game, and then he hopes he's spent enough money on quality to just win the rest of the games easy, as they often do.
But I think this for a point, right? So you look at some of the games this season, but the belt at some teams, like,
yeah,
the battered Leicester, the battered Swansea, but it was with late flurries of goals. They've done that thing where they've just been like perfunctory, like, you know, they've been like just a powerful side that grinds it out. Even against us at Old Trafford, you know, we took the lead, we controlled the game for the first 30 minutes, and I don't think they beat us to, you know, like, scintillating football. Given the players that they've got, that's someone they're obviously capable of with a different manager. But they're just big. They're just a big, strong side. And eventually, you know, their fitness levels and their power, that's what defeated us in the end. Whereas I don't think the fitness levels and the power will play into it as much in a home match at St. James's. And the other thing as well is that, like, as much as we're under pressure to get results, this game, to a certain extent, we're not under as much pressure as you could see, to a certain extent, Mourinho is to get a result. Well, because obviously, you know, they're not that far ahead in the second. They're not going to catch Man City, but at the same time, Mourinho can't kind of give the appearance of not catching Man City, you know what I mean? And there's a pressure there because they lost against Spurs last week, so I think that these are other factors that might play in our hands.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there. I'll go back to what you said, though, about us not being under pressure, because one of my questions to you tonight was going to be, Norman, do we need to stop picking up points in these games? You know, we've always kind of thought, if we win games against the teams around us, we'll be all right. But actually, we've come so far now where you're looking at the fixture list thinking, actually, we've got Man U at home, we've got Arsenal at home, we've got Chelsea at home. Do we need to be picking up a couple of points out of those games now, because there's so few opportunities left to get points on the board and to get us to that kind of 40-point goal of staying up? So I know you're saying we're not under pressure, and you're right, we're not. They're under pressure, and if Mourinho finishes lower than third, like, he should lose his job, because that's just not good enough for the amount of money he spent. But from our point of view, I think we need to start looking at these games and kind of, yes, it's still a free game, Man United, and if we lose, nobody will think it's unreasonable. But I think at some point, we've only got a couple of points from the top six so far this season, and yes, we've got those teams I've just mentioned to play at home. So we've got a point against Liverpool, and we've got a point again from two games against Man City in terms of goal difference, but that's about it. Do we need to pick up a couple more points from these games, Norman?
Right, mate. So you're absolutely right. Of course, right. We need to pick up points where we can. It's as simple as that. You know, like, if this was like the third or fourth game of the season, you'd be like, oh, right, yeah, of course, it does. You know, a defeat, well, in the grand scheme of things, what is it? Yeah, right now, a defeat is, you know, in the sense of it being, you know, a confidence drain. Obviously, it'll contribute a little bit of that. Also, it puts more pressure on the games that we're, you know, inverted commas, expected to win, i.e. Huddersfield, Southampton, West Brom. It puts more pressure on, which, you know, which can filter down from the stands. If the fans are nervous, the players will be nervous. But I suppose what I mean is that, yes, there's pressure on to pick up points, and maybe in this game, but we're not expected to. We're not expected to pick up a point. So the expectation levels are a lot lower, and that could play in our hands in the sense that, you know, we as a collective fan base, we're not going to be as kind of nervous as we might be, you know, against Burnley at home, against Swansea at home, against Huddersfield coming up or whatever. It'll be a raucous, but I think kind of more relaxed. Relaxed might be the wrong word, but it won't be as kind of like as much of a pressure cooker as it might be if it was Huddersfield at home this weekend.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So I'm just hoping that's how it pans out and that plays in our hands.
Yeah.
I'm confident we'll pick up a point.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think you've just kind of hit why I think this sort of game is important. And again, I'll not be gutted if we lose. Obviously, it's Man U. They've got £500 million worth of player, but if we could get something here, it means that those games against Huddersfield, Southampton, West Brom aren't the kind of six-pointers that every time we've come up to one of them fixtures, it's been off the back of a bad run, and kind of we came up to Burnley the other night and it's like, we'll have to win here, and the pressure's on so much. And I think that still seems to frighten our players, because we've got the youngest squad in the league, and, you know, when they're faced with a game against Burnley, who are a top-half team and they're much better than we're, as were Crystal Palace the other day, and they're coming up against these teams under so much pressure. And I think they're capable. They know they can do it. But as we've seen both times, 1-0 up, and then we'll get under a bit of pressure, and then a sloppy goal or a penalty is given away, and then we'll fall to bits. And I think if we could just get something on the board against like a Man U or an Arsenal, it kind of changes the mindset on these kind of games. And then we're going to Huddersfield saying, right, the pressure's not on as much. We've just took something off Arsenal. We've just took something off Man U. And so I'd really like to see us get something out of one of these games just to kind of set one away. And not have this kind of lose all these matches and then come up to Huddersfield at home desperate for 3 points.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. I think that a point against Man U and a point or three away to Bournemouth would just be, I mean, they would set us up unbelievably well for the rest of the season. The other thing as well is, I think you said before the magical 40-point mark, I think Mickey mentioned it a couple of times the other night, I don't think it'll be 40 points this season, because it's so incredibly tight from what, like, ninth downwards. I reckon 36 points will probably be enough this season. So what are we on at the moment? 26 points. You know, the three wins, you kind of think, oh yeah, Huddersfield, it's got to be Southampton, it's got to be West Brom, it's got to be. And I not picking up points in other games, Bournemouth away perhaps. Then, you know, Arsenal at home, then yeah, the pressure is massive in those games. But again, I just think, strangely enough, you know, like the Stoke and the West Ham matches away, I went to both those games, and I went there not expecting them to win. Like, and I think, like, the away fans that I was amongst, that expectation was similar, and it almost played into my hands, and we produced a really good performance. And I think again against Man U, there weren't that many of us expecting to win. And I think that'll really give the players a kind of a good sense of, like, I don't know, togetherness on the pitch. I've got a good feeling about it. I mean, don't get me wrong, we'll speak on Monday or Tuesday, and I'll probably be in the depths of despair. But right now, there's just a bit of optimism coursing through me veins. Sorry, that's the dog.
No, not a problem at all, man. I just think we need something to kind of to give the home crowd a bit of a break as well. We haven't won since October. A point against Man U, that's another thing that it's getting harder and harder to play at home because there's that expectation of we've been poor. We've been really poor at home and the results haven't been good enough. And you're always going to have a section of that crowd because there's so many people who just demand something, demand better, regardless of kind of the context of what's been happening. So we just need something. We need a break here, and we need it sooner rather than later. So Sunday's the day. Sunday's the day. We're going to get something, and it's going to...
You know, we've been really poor at home. I mean, obviously, in terms of points, we have been poor. There's no doubt about that. But the last two home performances against Burnley and Swansea, you know, I suppose the argument, you could make an argument, right? If fully fit Slimani, he was a goal scorer. You know, it hasn't worked out with Leicester, whatever. But he is. You know, this is a kid who, like, a season and a half ago cost Leicester nearly 30 million. With like a clinical finish on the side, I think Swansea and Burnley, like, we would have. If we'd gone 2-0 up neither of those games, which was quite feasible given how much of the ball we had, how many chances we created in the first half, if we'd gone 2-0 both those games, it would have been victories, and we'd be talking about, like, you know, a really improving home record and getting those vital wins. And we just haven't had the rub of the green in front of the goal, have we? And I think we haven't had the rub of the green, but also, you know, when you've got a quality centre forward in there like that, sometimes you don't necessarily need the rub of the green. You've just got a clinical finish in who doesn't kind of need like four or five chances to put the ball in the net.
I agree. I mean, where we've gone wrong the last few games is that second goal. Second goal would have won both those matches last week.
And Palace away.
Yeah. So yeah, the two games last week, and yeah, so. I mean, you've mentioned Slimani there, so I think we'll move on to the team because for once we've got options, we've got plenty to choose from, and some lads at work play a kind of predictions league every week, not a match predictions, but predicting Rafa's lineup, and I think the highest score all season has been 9 players because there's always one or two in there you're just not expecting, but we're going to try it anyway. Obviously, you've mentioned Slimani. If he's fit to play, I think we both know he's got to go in the team because he's a £30 million striker, and he's just obviously better than what we've got. I like Dwight Gayle, but his goal ratio this season's been poor. Hosslou, I've got nothing against the lad. His finishing's not been up there, and he's grafted like no one else this season to an extent. But for the same reason, I think he needs a break. And I think Mickey mentioned last week that he thought Hosslou had been hung out to dry. And I don't think that's fair. I think he just he needs a break, and especially at home he's played pretty much every game. So Slimani's got to go straight in for me, but from there we'll work backwards. Who would you like to see? I mean, first of all, formation. Do you think it's because it's Man U as at Chelsea? Do you think we'll play three at the back?
In a home game, I'd be slightly surprised. I think it might be the kind of 4-4-1-1 formation that we used to. On the Slimani issue now. Of course, you know, he's been out for a while. I think it might be unlikely that he starts. You don't know. I mean, Rafa does throw surprises in. There's part of me thinks that, like, you know, if it's quite a tight game and it gets to, like, the 55th, 60th minute and he's brought off the bench, I just think that'll give, like, an absolutely fucking huge lift to the crowd. You know, like, you know, there's a certain point in the match where you just need, like, something to just kick it all off again. I think because, obviously, you know, we're so desperate to see, like, a real centre-forward up there, you know, like a real quality centre-forward, which Slimani is, I'm sure of it, you know. I think bringing him off the bench would be like it'd almost be like a kind of injection of energy, like, you know, like in the sort of 55th, 60th minute of the match. But, as you mentioned, given, you know, how scarce our centre-forward's goals are, if he can start and then get like a first half out of him, which makes a difference in the overall whole of the match, then aye, there's an argument for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, like you said earlier, if we could get the first goal, it could be huge here. So we want to give ourselves the best chance. If Slimani can play 60 minutes, I'd rather he's on from the start. But I also see the point you're making, which would probably point towards Hosslou, whereas if we can do 50 minutes of donkey work, keep ourselves in the game, and bring Slimani on, that's another option. So it'll be interesting to see which...
No,
say that again, sorry, Norman.
If Slimani doesn't start, you'd rather Hosslou than Gayle in there.
Yeah, I think so. I think at home he's been absolutely fine, and he gives us something. He gives us an outlet. Whereas if we're under the cosh, as we're more than likely could be, for periods in the first half, Gayle doesn't hang on to the ball enough. At least the ball sticks to Hosslou. He can win it in the air. And I think now that we've got Kennedy, and I'd probably like to see Murphy as well. I mean, we've got options for pace and something to have a go at them, no matter how deep we end up. So, in that sense, I'd probably rather have Hosslew because he kind of adds balance to that. Gale. Perez has been class the last two games.
I agree. I read a theory again. Social media is as a barometer for how, you know, what people really think. You know, if you read like 10 screaming opinions on social media and two positive ones, you're automatically assuming that, like, you know, 92% of opinions of them are negative. And there were a few kind of comments about him being relatively ineffective against Palace, but again, it was one of those where, you know, he did do kind of what ultimately is in there for, which is just run sort of left to right and just graft his arse off, and that's kind of what he does. And obviously, what it's meant as well is that Big Mo's moved into centre midfield. He's been a revelation.
He has. I mean, for me, what Perez does well, the first half against Palace, we were good, we were the better team, and whenever we have a chance, he's involved. But also, he's the only player in the team at the minute who can win a free kick in their half. Like, it's really important to do that, because when we're under the pressure, having a free kick 40 yards from their goal, apart from the fact that we're actually very good from set pieces at the minute and we're scoring a lot of goals, I think we've scored like a third of our goals from set pieces this season.
I think we've scored more than anyone else in the Premier League from corners this season.
Yeah, so I think it's something like 35% of our goals have come from set pieces. So apart from anything else, that's very important. But, you know, especially against a team like Man U, you need that respite. You need to win a free kick to get taken out. Perez is quick enough with his feet to just do that, to give her that outlet. So I think Raf will definitely pick him at number 10. Kennedy has to start. I'd like to see him complete a game. I know he's hauled off quite early against Palace, which raised some eyebrows, but I think Dodsy put it on the podcast. He's not played much football. He must have just been protecting him, which is fair enough. It was a shame because once he went off, we didn't really have any attack and threat from that point. But for the same reason, I hope that's kept him fit for this one.
How good is it to see a genuinely quick, skillful winger, well, like raw talent, you know, like talent that still needs going, and
yeah,
it's dead exciting, isn't it? It's dead exciting to see a player like that. It just feels like a long time since we've seen a player who there's just like a buzz of anticipation when he gets the ball or when he pegs it up the line. You know, I mean, you know what, Jacob Murphy to a certain extent has got the potential to be like that as well. He's really coming to his own this sort of last few months, and he's a good option from the bench. I mean, that's the question there, isn't it? Like left and right midfielders/wingers, who would you go for? You got McKennedy on the left, where would you put on the right?
Well, so I think we'll play three at the back, because we did against Man City and we did against Chelsea, and I think that's what Raf will do to keep winning the game, because we've now got the option of Kennedy. I think that puts Yedlin on the right because of his pace.
Yeah.
Or Mankio. It could be Mankio. And I just think Richie, I thought he played well first half last week, but he faded out the game again. And to be honest, he hasn't played well for a while. And I loved him last season, and I don't want to give up on him. But you've mentioned Murphy. If we play 4-4-1-1 or 4-5-1 or whatever you want to call it, he's definitely my choice for the right wing, because I think with him and Kennedy on both wings, that gives Manu a lot to think about. And it doesn't really matter who's up front. You could put Gale up front. You could put Hosslew. You could hopefully put Slimani. They've suddenly got... We've got a threat, and I think we just haven't had enough threat this season. I think Christianatsu, I've been quite critical of him the last few weeks, but I think he's been burnt out this season because we spent the first run up to Christmas where he was our only attacking threat, and we're just pinging the ball out of the left wing, and it's just so easy to defend against that he's probably lost a bit of confidence because he's just constantly been dispossessed, constantly being muscled off the ball because they just put two on him. And I think now we've got options, we've got an attacking threat on both wings, and it gives us that balance that Rafa always talks about.
Yeah.
So, I think, as you've mentioned, the raw skill of Kennedy and that kind of talent, it's I'm really excited to see more of it. And as you say, Murphy's shown that as well in the last few months. So, I'd like to see them both just in, and even as part of a 5-3-2. Because I think we're gonna do the usual. We're gonna keep it tight. Maybe he's try and get an early goal. Maybe he's have a little bit of a go at them, but at the end of the day, it'll be about staying in the game, because we did it at Old Trafford and then we got a hammering. So this time it'll be more about staying in the match and keeping it tight. But with that kind of attack, you know, there's always a chance to go up the other end and nick one.
Aye, I agree. You're right. Having the pace is just it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant having that kind of pace on the pitch. In terms of the centre mid, I mean, I think Shelby was decent on Sunday. And I think Shelby and Diomi are actually starting to build up like quite the decent understanding. I mean, the amount of donkey work that Diomi is doing is just fucking phenomenal at the moment.
He's been a revelation.
It really has. It's incredible to even say this, but I'm genuinely looking forward to seeing him play again this weekend to see how he gets on, because his confidence is absolutely through the roof, you know. And I think would you go with the combo of Shelby and Diomi?
Absolutely. No, you're right. The last two games have been unreal. And, you know, Hayden's had a quiet season. He's still young. He's got a lot to learn. And he's struggled in some of the big games. Marino, I still love him. I still think he's class. But he's another one who's... He's just a young lad. And he's got a lot to learn about the Premier League. And, you know, I think early doors, he was getting a lot of time and space. And he's, people aren't giving him that anymore because they know what he can do. So... he's finding it a little bit more difficult. So Shelby and Diomi are experienced. They're the right ones to have in at the time, especially, as I've mentioned, with such a young squad, they're probably two of the most senior players, two of the most Premier League experienced players. So they have to be in there, and they've absolutely earned the right to be there in the last few games. So, and again,
if we go for the three centre-halves, who are you looking at? You're looking at Clark, Lascelles and Dummett on the left-hand side of that three centre-half... I was going to say three centre-half pair in there. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. I think he will. You'll put Dummett back there. Clark might be injured, so if that happens, we might see. Well, we'll probably see Mbemba. If not Lejeune, it might be time to give him another run out, with Lascelles obviously at the heart of it. So, I think there's options again, isn't there? It's nice for once we've got options in all positions and a couple of different formations we can do, which. I think Rafa unfairly got accused of being kind of one-dimensional early in the season. It was the same formation, pretty much the same lineup with the odd variant for months on end, but we didn't have anything. And it's funny what buying a left winger, buying another striker, and even a keeper, we've got a bit of competition for Darlow, and I thought he was class last game. But, you know, it's just a couple of players makes all the difference, and suddenly we've got options and we've got the chance to go into a game where the other team don't know what we're going to do, whereas I think we became very predictable, and that's why we kind of just haven't been able to get a break.
Well, I'll tell you what, right? I haven't had a drink for 4 days, right? Which I know doesn't sound long, but it's long in the grand scheme of things. I don't know what it is, but I think like these like hideous amounts of optimism. I don't know where they're coming from, because I was thinking about this earlier on, and I thought, right. Look at Sunday at Palace, right? I thought Yedlin and Dummett were really good. I think Dummett's been really good since he come back from injury. Yedlin, as I say, he did really well counting the threat of Zaha on Sunday. And then you can think, all right, then maybe Slimani up front. All of the wingers, right? You've got like possibly Murphy and Kennedy. And then you think, well, you know what? Shelby and Diomi are working well again in the centre midfield. And then you're thinking, oh, at the back, Lascelles, you know, Lascelles is a decent player, like he really is. And then you start thinking, you know what, like. The team, like it's Ari, you know, like it's strong enough to get the points to survive in this division. When you compare our team to now, like the sort of teams in the bottom five and six around us, you know, we're not miles away. We're not miles away from them, which is it's testament to Benitez's skills on operating on such a tight managed budget to have gradually created this squad, which is. Is all right, you know, but it does give me hope for the rest of the season.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was looking at the table before. I mean, realistically, I think there's three, maybe four teams that I think we're better than. And now we've walked these places. We're better than West Brom. We're better than Huddersfield. I would say we're better than Brighton. I know they're still above at the minute, but we're better than Brighton. I think we're better than Swansea, but they're running away at the minute. I don't know what the hell Carvajal's... I don't understand it. I can't get my head around it, but they're just...
That'll pop, like, I reckon. I really do reckon that'll pop, like, with Carvajal. I think they've had, like, that like, classic, cliched, like, new manager boost. I think Swansea have just been so poorly managed for the last, sort of, 2 to 3 seasons. Like, you know, Guidolin, Clement came in and did like a really good kind of you know, fair fighting job, but he's a classic kind of assistant manager, isn't he? He's been a good assistant manager all of his life, and he's had a couple of jobs and haven't worked out. I just think that I think you've got like a Swansea squad there who had like they've just had like an almost a release of playing for like a proper manager, and I think I genuinely think it'll fizzle out because I don't think they're that particularly strong. I mean, I'm hoping this in any ways. And then you look at West Brom, and I think I mentioned this on the pod the other day. They played like their match at the weekend against their Southampton. I think it was the centre midfield was Gareth Barry and Claudio Jakob, for fuck's sake. I mean, like, you wouldn't have either of those two in your side, would you? Even Barry, for all of his experience and the fact that we lack experience, a 37-year-old Gareth Barry, like, I wouldn't be happy with him playing centre midfield for us now, would you?
No, obviously not.
There you go. So I mean, this optimism I'm feeling right now, like, it's you know, it's probably gonna backfire, but fucking, I'm gonna enjoy it while it's here.
Yeah, I can't get my head around it because, honestly, after Burnley and Crystal Palace, I don't think I've ever felt so gutted because those are, well, at least first half against Palace and pretty much the whole Burnley game, I thought they were our two best performances so far, or at least for a long time, because we had a really bad run, obviously, before Christmas. And we've suddenly got five, we've only lost one game in six at Man City. And you realise actually that we're doing all right, and we seem to be turning it round. And while I felt gutted on Sunday, somehow this week I've kind of taken things into perspective, and you look at the team we've got and you think, you know what, why not? Man U, it starts here. We're gonna be safe by April. Or am I mental?
Well, you know what, mate. How do you feel after the match? How good are you? You know, Burnley at home, like, you know, 1-0 up, end up drawing ones each other, the equaliser. Palace away, 1-0 up. Hey, given the points that we've got in the relegation battle, in, of course you're going to be good afterwards. You know, it is going to feel like the world's end because, like, these are games that we went to goal up in, and we haven't been able to defend the lead, and we've dropped the points. You know, and of course it's good, but then you see a couple of days of reflection, you're like, well, hold on, you know, like, Palace away, of course you'd have taken a point against Palace away. Burnley match, of course you won the 3 points, but it was kind of unreal. We either got an equaliser really late on, and we could have had them buried.
Yeah. And both.
And then you think, we might. Go on, mate.
Both of them are better than us. Burnley are better than us. They're in the top, the seventh? Top seven. And Palace, there's so many of those players you would have in our team, so I know in the context of the season, we needed to start picking up points, and these were the games we kind of thought, right, we'll get four, maybe 6 points, and we haven't. But it was so important not to lose those games. Obviously, we haven't given Palace 3 points, which is important. And we've just, as we keep saying, we're matching these teams. These teams are better than us. They've got better football players than us. They've got more money than us, or they've spent more money than us, and yet we're still matching them. I know we've got Rafa. It's just like, it's going to give eventually, and we've got all our players fit again. We've got Kennedy through the door. We've got Slimani ready to go on Sunday. It starts now. It starts fucking now, Norman.
Well, that's it. That's another thing. You see, this is, like, there's obviously another reason why the optimism is. This is fucking Man United at home. Like, you know, regardless of the fact that Mourinho is an absolute ball bag, you know, it's always a massive, because Man U, you know, they're one of the world's most famous clubs. It's always a big game, and we're going to this match with, you know, with the kind of nervous excitement of the fact that we're in a relegation battle, and also we're going to this match, you know, John Carver's not a manager, Alan Pardew post 2013 isn't a manager, you know, McLaren's not a manager. We're going to this match against Mourinho with Rafa as the manager, so there's just more reason for optimism. You know, it's almost like, it almost feels like, you know what, I should be optimistic, of course I should be. And let's just hope that, you know, again, I'm not in the fetal position on the set at 5 o'clock on a Sunday crying into a bucket of diamond white cider.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's no reason to be. If we don't win this game, it's still not over. Like, we've never been in the relegation zone. I think we'll be fine. But yeah, optimism, absolutely. I mean, Jose Mourinho has never won it at St James's Park, and Rafa hates him. There's no way he'd let that record be broken. No chance. And
Simon, the Jose Mourinho thing. Are we talking about Jose Mourinho hasn't won in the league at St James's Park?
We must be, because I think you're going to correct me, are you?
Well, and I mentioned this to Alex this morning, but he basically doesn't see it as a defeat because we lost against him in, I think, November 2004 in the League Cup. when Souness was manager, 2-0 at home, League Cup fourth round, I think. They got two goals in extra time. I think Gudjonsson scored one of them. So that was a Mourinho victory, but it wasn't in the league, and it was after 90 minutes. So should we just say we still haven't won at St. James's?
Yeah, and I'm going to have to edit that out of the podcast because it ruins my point. No. It's a League Cup, extra time, doesn't count. In normal time, he's not winning it. And to Rafa, that'll be important. Not wanting to be the first one to lose to Jose in the league here. It'll mean a lot to him. And you know what? Every time he's been up here with Chelsea, with Man U obviously coming, it's a big game. It's the atmosphere at St. James's is class for these matches. Remember Sissoko smashing Ashley Cole? It's got the potential to be one of those occasions, and we've got Kennedy there. I'm excited. I'm excited, Norman. I can't wait. And I think it all starts here. We'll get a result, and then we'll breeze back to safety.
Well, yeah.
So I think we'll leave it there, because otherwise we'll talk ourselves out of it again. So that's the match preview for Man United. Thank you very much, Norman Riley. However, don't go just yet. We've got Dodsy coming on any second now to give us hot off the press from the Rafa Benitez podcast with the Times. So here he comes. Dogger, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Si.
Right. Do you want to tell the listeners where you've been and what the crack has been tonight?
Yes, I've been at the Tyneside Cinema watching The Game, which is the Times football podcast live, hosted by Alison Rhodes of The Times with George Colgan, the very excellent George Colgan, and Oliver Kay from The Times. But of course, the main event, the reason why I think a lot of people were there, was Rafa Benitez was on the panel for the night.
Class, I mean, what was the theme of the night? Were they talking about transfers? Were they talking about the rest of the season? What were... Presumably, the takeover was off the cards. So.
Yeah, I noticed Wendy Taylor from the club was there, but I mean, she's very close to Rafa, and it may not have been the club keeping an eye on him, but it definitely wasn't anything you wouldn't expect to hear. I mean, the theme of the night was a general, you know, the Alison's a very good host, asked some very good questions of the panel in particular. George was brilliant as usual. Oliver Kay was very good as well, but it was very much a Q&A with Rafa Benitez. as you'd expect with having such a man of his stand on the stage. And I suppose there was all sorts of absolutely like really brilliant anecdotes. Rafa's a really funny bloke. I mean, it's quite hard. So I mean, you know ourselves in the recent press from how hard it is to make people laugh on a stage. With me and you both fail miserably. Rafa Benitez just had the room in his hand. He's a really, really funny bloke with loads of brilliant stories. That came across really nice. On a non-Newcastle perspective, before getting into Newcastle, he told an absolutely brilliant, one of his answers was so good. He was asked by a lad in the audience if his house was burning down, was on fire, and he had to rescue one of his trophies, which would it be? Good question. You had a brilliant answer and said that everyone concentrates on the trophies and thinks about trophies, but promotions are actually, to him, far more important and far more, you know, he attaches a lot more of feeling towards them. And he talked about getting promoted with Tenerife to La Liga, you know, when his rivals for promotion was Atletico Madrid, Sevilla, Real Betis, a couple of others. So that was a brilliant answer, I thought, and it was so interesting how he, you know, talked about Istanbul. He got asked about Istanbul. I kind of felt like it's very interesting. Went through the motions a little bit on that one because he's been asked about it so many times before, and he alluded to that too, and the stories have been told 100 times. Probably not to any Castle audience, but it was so interesting to hear him talk about getting promoted with those clubs, his playing career, his early management career, and the differences between managing in Spain, England, and Italy was absolutely fantastic on that. I mean, I think it'll be released as a podcast. I'm not sure. Not often you'll hear us on the Truthbit podcast advertising a podcast, but really, you've got to go and listen to the game. I mean, it's a good football podcast anyway if you're looking for a number two behind the Truthbit podcast. But yeah, definitely recommend you go back and listen to that because he's absolutely fucking brilliant on it. Do you want me to go to the Newcastle stuff?
Yeah, crack on. I mean, I wasn't there, so you just tell the story.
Aye. So, I mean, it's very much stuff people have expected to hear before. So a couple of insights from the weekend, actually. It was almost like you had our table booked at the pub in Croydon because he goes, Rafa's talking about the criticism he gets from fans, and obviously, you know, you only get that... If Newcastle win 1-0 against Crystal Palace, no one says, why did he take Kennedy off? No one says, why did he take Modiyama off? Modiyama was injured, as we kind of thought, saw him limping. You know, no one says, why wasn't Hosseldue playing? You've dropped Hosseldue, it's ridiculous, and Hosseldue had a virus that you explained afterwards, and he was talking about the decision that he makes, and one of the differences in Newcastle, because we're not winning as many games as he would at other clubs, he is questioned more and more and more, and as a result, he doesn't worry about that, but he kind of explained that. He thinks things through very carefully, and he goes back and looks back in retrospect, because, you know, you beat Burnley 1-0, no one talks about bringing Kennedy off. Or Hosseldue taking a penalty. We might, that was such a bad pen, we might have talked about that. But, you know, because we conceded the goal and with 5 minutes to go, everyone looks back at every decision and everyone's looking for answers and why didn't this work and why didn't this work. And that's something that's kind of new for him at this stage of his career in terms of, you know, every single tiny decision that him as the manager makes being so not even criticised, he wasn't complaining.
Go on, sorry, we lost you for a second there.
I'm back. So, you know, he gave that crucial message about the fans staying behind the team, which everyone listening to me now has listened to him say, and he ran the home and said, I'm going to keep saying it. He said, this is a nice thing for him to say. He said, the fans being behind the team and being vocal, not getting on the team's back, it's the difference between a win and a loss in some games. It's so important that players, I mean, he didn't allude to them by name, but players like Christian Atsu, Kennedy, Jacob Murphy, try things again if they don't come off first time in regards to beating a man, or John Drew Shelby tries a pass, or Mo Diame, you know, tries any of the numerous brilliant things that he does every single week. If there's a big moan or a groan, or, you know, I'm preaching in the converted here, people listening to this podcast know the crack, but he's saying it, he went in a bit more detail tonight and said, like, and he said the words, it's the fans can make a difference. You get all these people who say, oh, you know, there's no, you know, singing or getting behind the team or all this or that, it doesn't make a difference. Well, it does. The bloke is on stage speaking to a load of strangers saying it does make a difference, and obviously it's the kind of stuff that he told us on a regular basis last season. He rammed that point home tonight, which is kind of unsurprising, as I'm sure everyone will have expected that. He kind of did that thing where he asked the audience about the big difference between the first and the second half against Palace, was that Wilfred Zaha played as a striker in a 4-4-2 alongside Christian Benteke in the first half, whereas Zaha moved out onto the left wing to directly run it on DeAndre Yedlin, which is, you know, obviously he knows what he's talking about. And that was the major change in the second half. And I think back to some of the people as I was walking out the ground at Palace saying, fucking shite, second half, fucking bottled it, all that kind of stuff. And actually, you know, he was saying there, you know, Rafa saying, that was a really good move, fair play to Palace, put us under pressure. Because Zaha went out wide, James McArthur was able to move into a number 10 position, kind of, and there was a lot of space there. And we therefore were unable, because McArthur was in that position, to build from the back like we have been, were unable to move up the pitch, kind of in phases, passing slowly, that kind of thing, creating space. And we had to rely on the counter-attack. And like we said in the podcast on Monday, we had to rely on the counter-attack in the second half. We fucked it up, but we shouldn't have fucked it up. We should have scored on at least one occasion. So it's kind of fine margins like that he was talking about, and it was very, that was fascinating. And fair play to the lad who, you know, he asked the crowd what was the difference on Saturday, and the lad put his hand up and answered that one. So that was really impressive by him. And he kind of, it was kind of like a little victory for the things we've been talking about, and the Newcastle fans have been talking about recently. He didn't call the team naive, as I've done constantly this season, but he talked about the problems that we've got in terms of lack of experience and players not going down at the right time, players not knowing when to time waste, kick the ball away. And we've talked about that constantly this season, and he's kind of probably the first time that I've seen talked about that. And that's the difference between, for example, Bournemouth players. You know, some of their players, yeah, Harry Art is a good player, or yeah, Cooks or stuff like that. He was saying Newcastle fans might not want to sign those type of players, whereas Rafa would love those lads in our team, because Premier League experience is everything, and if you don't have it, you can't manufacture it. It's not something you can create, and that's something the team seriously lacked this season, and he's spot on. We're not the only people who noticed it. Loads of other people listening have noticed it in other bands. We're such an inexperienced and youthful side at this level that we're kind of, and it almost goes back to the point you made earlier, that that's why the support's so important and staying behind the lads.
Yeah.
Talked about the second goal a lot, which, you know, I was saying on the podcast on Monday. Second goal, he said, getting the second goal is a real problem for the team, and even said, his family in Spain, this is one for Bolland, who's not listening, who's not on now, hopefully he's listening. you know, he's saying, people say to him, Spain, why do we drop so deep after we score a goal? You know, it's a frustration to Newcastle fans. Why do we, when we score a goal, we're not pushing the second goal? He's like, again, he's like, that's not the plan. It's genuinely not the plan. It's like last season when we talked about it, Simon.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, the other team will react and they'll press and they'll push up the pitch. And you've got, you know, we'll get pushed deeper and Rafa will try and get the lads up the pitch and push higher and stop dropping deep. But when you're defending the lead, it's purely a mental and experience-based thing. There's a reason our lads, against Burnley and against Palace, there's a reason we can get the first goal, no problem, and we just don't have that final bit of experience and quality. Hence the counter-attacks at Palace when Kennedy fucks it up. And Kennedy's done fantastic things for us, as we said. A little bit more experience. He's played 100 Premier League games there. We'll probably score that goal.
Yeah.
So that's just one of the, you know, I mean, it was a really fascinating night and a great insight from him.
Cracking, yeah, I'm jealous you were there. I mean, it's quite reassuring because Norman and I have just been talking about the experience thing and why Shelvey and Diame are actually working so well last few games as our midfield, because they are, albeit still quite young, Shelvey certainly, our most experienced two players at the minute, certainly in terms of Premier League games, and it's working. And I think that's why Perez will keep getting the game, because he's that player who can win a free kick in the opposition half, and kind of he's got a bit more nous about him, and you're right, the rest of the team have got a lot more to learn, and he's been saying that in the press this week, and I'm sure he said the same again tonight, which says we've still got a lot to learn as a team. And you can see it's happening every week, and then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that we pick up on. And it's always fascinating to hear from Rafa, obviously, but it's just reassuring that what every week when you're asking yourself questions, when you're asking your mates questions, he's always got an answer, and it always makes perfect sense as well.
There was one thing which is a little bit disappointing from one of the people in the crowd. Rafa explained, he was asked a question by George Allison. You know, this phrase that he uses famously, football is a lie, and what does he mean? And he basically said, you know, everyone turns to the press conference and we do the post-game interviews and everyone says that, you know, the interviewer is Jeff fucking Shreves and etc. They'll stand there and say, blah, 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 what happened? And you kind of tell them the truth. You can't tell the whole truth. You can't. It's nonsensical. It's the same in any sport. You can't sit there and say, oh, Rafa, what happened in the second half? But you kind of say, well, the players are too inexperienced to play in the Premier League at this level. We're just glad for a point. You can't say, why are you not playing this or this player? And you can't go because I had a fucking shite week in training. They turned up 20 minutes late. You just can't say those things.
Yeah.
So he goes through all of that. And then the lad, Alison Rudd, goes, we've got time for one last question, so make it a good one. She goes, the bloke's had his hand up for longer than anyone else. And the bloke goes, me and my mates can't get our head round. We have an international Serbian striker who would do great things in this team. Like, what's he doing it for them? You know what I mean? It's just like, so it's like, he's just fucking explaining it, like, he can't tell you. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's a ridiculous question. A proven international goal scorer, that's another conversation another day, which we've already had.
Why did someone just turn around and not like put the question back to him and say, yeah, you've got a Serbian international striker, what's he doing at Fulham? Like, you can ask him the same question. It's ridiculous.
And now, why are Man United? They will not go into it now, but...
Yeah.
You know, and Rafa gave a great answer. He said he's a good lad. He said he speaks to him regularly. He got discipline problems, you know? Newsflash, mate. If you've seen the bloke. And obviously, the lads who he's picked, and he's talking about Hospital and Frankel, are doing well. They're doing the things he asked for. And because we don't have... Very rarely do I have more than 50% possession in a game. We rely on the counter-attack, and obviously he's no good for that. And he said, listen, Alexander Mitrovic, you get the balls in the box, you attack constantly, he'll score you a boatload of goals. And Rafa wants nothing more than him to fire Fulham to promotion, to be the top scorer for Serbia at the World Cup, and come back next season a better player for us, when hopefully we're still in the Premier League and we're a better team. So that was a very good answer by Rafa, and you can't disagree, but I just thought,
Interestingly, that comes just after Football is a Lie.
I know. I'd have loved to ask loads of questions that panel night, but I didn't put my hand up because we've had our chance.
Yeah.
Once in a lifetime chance as a podcast speaking to them. So, that, you know, and I just thought, ask my fucking Mitrovic, mate. Like, how are we? Like, got some money? Do you know what I mean? Like, why? This was so frustrating to hear that question. But Rafa did such a good job of batting it away with a straight back. One other thing I want to highlight, you made a really good point, actually, and something that I don't think Norman might have touched on this earlier in the season. He says that, when Huddersfield and Brighton win a game, it's massive. It's like, it's new. The Premier League is new to their fans, when winning a game and getting a point is such a massive thing for them to win a game in the Premier League. And it's class for us. We go nuts. I'm sure everyone listening goes absolutely tits. when we win, we hardly ever win. It's class, but it's like it's just a little bit different because there's that expectation here that if we finish 17th this season, there wouldn't be because we're not dicks. But there'll be no pitch invasion. Brighton will have the scarves out, like promote. You know, Huddersfield put a new drum in the ground. Like it's just such a big thing to those clubs. Whereas we're kind of in the fan base. And they're right, and us, I mean, you've got us at the start of the season talking about 46, 48 points. People have expected us to stay up, particularly with Rafa as the manager. And you did the video yesterday. I hope everyone's watched the video. I'll put a link in the description. You sign, Mickey did a great video yesterday about Newcastle's survival prospects. And we're all saying, we'll definitely stay up. We will stay up. We only need 12 points in the last 12 games. And whereas Huddersfield and Brighton are thinking, you know what, if we go down, it's been some fucking blast. They won at Newcastle for so many reasons. It's saying like, well, if we go down, we'll have a good season. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's been quite hard for the players in comparison to Brighton's players. There's a lot less pressure on those sides. I mean, obviously, you've got the takeover and all that kind of stuff, but he didn't talk about that quite clearly. You know, one thing he did kind of say, listen, I'm not going to... I think he might have been asked a question about it, and he said, people keep expecting me to criticise the club. I'm not going to do it. The club, he went, I've told the club what I think. So that was just a little like, you know, I've been on the phone to Charlie and Ashley, they're now they're fucked up. But I just want to stay up. That's what we've got to do. And he had such a level-headed, as you'd expect, and composed approach to staying up. And it's like, he's not us. He's not saying we're going to stay up. He's just saying we've got to do the right things. We've got to keep the fans behind us. And, you know, we've got a great chance and that's what you want. And he made a very good point that sometimes we'll play teams at home, teams in the bottom half of the league at the time in Everton, there was kind of an expectation amongst the fans that, people said it on this podcast, people said it on Twitter, we should be beating this team, we should be getting 4 points out of six against Everton and Leicester, we should be doing this, we should be doing that, and he made a very good point, as fuck that, we didn't say fuck that obviously, he said, we are trying to compete with these teams, regardless of where they are in the league. If they've been in the Premier League, he didn't go into budgets, but they're experienced in the Premier League. He talks about experience a lot, as I've alluded to, and they are the teams that we aspire to. And he's spot on. Bournemouth, great example. We should be beating Bournemouth at home, and it's not the case. He said it's not the case. He says we're not the Newcastle United of old, and he's not trying to, you know, little club. Listen, he said loads of really positive things about the football club, the area, the city, the support, the passion, the region, and comparing it to Liverpool. And he was not talking down Newcastle United. He was just saying we do not have the right to beat anybody in this Premier League with the squad that we've got. And then I'm supposed to finish off because I've actually been on the phone here for 70 minutes now, so this is supposed to be a 5-minute segment. The players are doing their best. He is absolutely guaranteed us that every single one of those players in that squad on that pitch are giving everything they possibly can, and we've just got to get behind them. So, same old, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we say it every week, but once again, you're right. Listen to the man. He each knows.
Aye.
Right, cheers, Dogger. That was really interesting and has added to mine and Norman's 35 minutes of bouncing off each other, so always good to have a third voice in there. We'll be back on Monday, Dogger. After
unless we get done like 6-0, which we won't because we're going to win. But if we get done like 6-0, we might do it straight after. But otherwise, it'd be Monday night for the post-Man U victory podcast.
Cracking. All right. See you then. Cheers.